Well, it has been a very rocky few weeks, really, on the markets and in the corporate sector. Stephen Mayne is the founder of crikey.com.au and a shareholder activist. He joins me regularly to discuss some business, and there's been no shortage of topics. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Deborah.
It has been a really remarkable few weeks in business and on the stock market. You heard Michael Brissenden there talking about ABC Learning. It's a topic that you know pretty well. Do you think that the Eddie Groves corpse has been taken off the stock exchange completely now? But what is the future for these sorts of companies as startup companies?
Well, future for startup companies in relation to, say, childcare, I think it's pretty bleak. I think that you're going to see a regulatory backlash. I don't think philosophically that Julia Gillard or the state Labor governments particularly like the idea of a colourful Gold Coast entrepreneur suddenly controlling 25% of all childcare centres. So I think the banks are in a real bind when it comes to ABC Learning, because they've got $1 billion worth of debts tied up in the company, and who is going to pay $1 billion to buy all those childcare centres? The government won't allow one buyer to come in and just remain dominant. That was very clear from Julia Gillard's comments in the Parliament yesterday. So I think you're going to see a centre-by-centre piecemeal breakup of the empire, and the banks are going to be very disappointed that they won't get particularly large prices as not-for-profits and community groups, the odd government, maybe the odd small childcare provider snap them up. But, I mean, even another childcare provider, CFK, has got into strife. They're a listed company as well. So the whole concept of publicly listed childcare providers in a sector which takes $300 or $400 million a year in grants out of the government, I think that sector's basically gone, and the banks have got a heck of a mess on their hands at ABC Learning.
The other fascinating thing is that there's still some nominal value that some of these centres have, which it appears that the whole business was built on inflated values. So while the centres are saying, or the banks are saying, we don't want to sell at less than these values, the values aren't real, so they just have to, in the end, meet the market like anybody selling anything has to meet.
Well, that's exactly right, that Eddie Groves simply paid top dollar to take out all the operators. I mean, Michael Kroger, Peter Costello's great mate, he made several million dollars getting into the childcare industry at the start of the process and then eventually selling out, where Eddie Groves basically bought up all of the competitors. Now, Eddie paid too much. He had related party transactions with his brother-in-law, a fellow called Mr. Zulo, who was doing all of the developments. And the other really messy element here is that a lot of the childcare centres themselves are actually owned by a separate listed property trust that was put together by Eddie's stockbroker, Austock, in which Eddie also owned a stake in another unfortunate related party deal. So the receiver is not actually selling the freehold. It's selling the licence to operate a centre which is owned by a separately listed company which hasn't gone into receivership yet. So it's a very, very messy situation, and I just can't see how everyone's not going to take a huge bath. Although the one thing I would say is that they still do own 40% of the US business. So the banks will be able to sell off that 40% stake in the big US business and receive presumably a couple of $100 million from that.
Now, there's been other interesting developments in other fields. The National Australia Bank is raising cash, a $3 billion placement, the biggest ever, you say.
Yes, well, look, banks around the world have raised now US $714 billion attempting to rebuild their balance sheets after taking $1 trillion plus in hits on the global credit crisis. And so far in Australia, we have the strongest banks in the world. ACCA, we have the most expensive banking system in the world, and it's very strong. And after the Commonwealth Bank raised $2 billion in a recent placement to fund its purchase of Bank West from the retreating British parent, NAB yesterday came out with a very surprising $3 billion placement at $20 a share. So just like that, click of the fingers, bang, they've raised $3 billion and they've actually had a credit rating upgrade. And I think their share price will probably recover a little bit today because they now have the strongest Tier 1 ratio of any of the banks. They have 8.7% Tier 1 capital ratio. And wouldn't the government of New South Wales like to be able to just go bang and sell $3 billion worth of shares in New South Wales Inc. overnight to stop a ratings downgrade? Because that effectively is what NAB has done, and they've got a rating upgrade.
Where's the money come from?
Well, it's just all the investors out there, particularly the $1 trillion, or it might be a fraction less than a trillion now, that sits in Australian super funds. And at the end of the day, there is a flight to quality that's going on here with investors, and a lot of people have been hoarding cash. But when
I wish that was me. I love the idea of hoarding cash.
I know, don't we all? But the National Australia Bank, their shares were trading at $24 last Thursday. They fell a couple of dollars on Friday. And then the bank came along and said, well, we'll give you a 10% discount. So, you know, it's a discount sale. You can buy $3 billion worth of shares in National Australia Bank at a 10% discount. And $3 billion got written out just like that. So if you've got good quality stock to offer, good dividend yield, as the banks do do pay, and you offer a quick discount, then you can get it away. And we saw AMP raise $450 million last week. There is a lot of equity raising going on at the moment, and it really is the quick and the dead. The companies that are leaving it too long, like, say, the GPTs and the Mervacs of the world, are ending up doing it at huge discounts because they're perceived to be desperate. They're desperate to raise money. But if you like AMP and NAB, and you stand there, you say you're strong, everything's fine, and then you do a very quick capital raising without letting rumours develop that you've got problems, then you can get it away, and NAB is now safe, and the focus now shifts on to Westpac in particular, as well as the Commonwealth Bank, which don't have 8% Tier 1 capital ratios. They are below 8%, and I think the big four cartel, they tend to all move in unison. We've seen it with interest rates over the years. I think you'll probably see the rest of the banks also doing quick-fire capital raisings, because at the end of the day, there's a heck of a lot of foreign loans and foreign banks that are pulling out of Australia, and it really is up to the big four banks to rebuild their balance sheets, strengthen up, and be able to grow their loan books to take on all of these foreign loans which are fleeing the country, as banks around the world just to focus on being strong in their home market.
And speaking of desperation, some companies being more desperate than others, the car industry is obviously pretty desperate at the moment. What do you make of the bailout package?
Look, I think it's actually a reasonable step in the circumstances. It's far better than having quotas or increases in tariffs to try and protect jobs. The bottom line here is that the US car industry is broke. I mean, the General Motors is only has a market capitalisation of $4 billion Australian dollars. Ford is only worth $7.5 billion Australian dollars. So National Australia Bank overnight almost raised as much money as the entire great General Motors is worth. Toyota, by way of example, is a lot more valuable. It's worth $218 billion. But at the end of the day, the car industry, particularly the US manufacturers, are stuffed. They're absolutely stuffed. And they will not continue to support loss-making operations. And there are so many employees in the Australian industry. We've got all this sunk capital here. The government may as well try and preserve those jobs and support the transition to lower emission fuel technologies. They've done it in a way, particularly, say, with the Green Fund, where the companies have got to spend $3 to get $1, which I think is reasonable. And same with the direct financial assistance. The companies have actually got to invest in their plant before they get any money. So I just think it's a reality. Governments all over the world do it. If we want to keep the jobs, then this is just something you've got to do, even if you are a bit of a market purist who doesn't like bailing out industries.
If you reward the good behaviour, so, for example, you see the company spend the $3 in order to get the $1, how do you supervise the way that the money is handed out if you're the government?
Well, I guess it does become a bit bureaucratic. You've got to have auditors going in there and confirming that this new production facility has been upgraded, that you have spent this amount of money. So I guess it'll be like any sort of bureaucratic process where you've just got to have a proper tracking system. It will be a bit complicated, but clearly the government's got to be strong there. They can't give, you know, a huge cheque to a company that then turns around and closes its plant. And there's a lot of talk that in the longer term, Ford in particular, which hasn't built a big enough export profile in Australia, unlike particularly Toyota and General Motors, that Ford has been closing jobs and production capacity down here in Victoria. So the government will have to be very careful to make sure that, particularly Ford, doesn't get huge whacks of government money without actually committing to spend it first. I'm sure they'll have various auditors in there making sure that that works out.
Now, Stephen, I'll just remind people, Stephen Mayne is, of course, the founder of crikey.com.au and a shareholder activist. Stephen, it is New South Wales mini-budget day. We're counting up our assets and counting out our liabilities. Where will we end up?
Well, I think you're in a real spot, and it is very. I'm surprised that the government's going to sort of announce $10 billion of asset sales to get out of this spot. I mean, I know selling off the electricity retailers and the forests and the lotteries, it doesn't sort of, particularly the forests and the lotteries, doesn't sound too dramatic. But asset prices have fallen by 40-50% the world over. So why you would come out and sell into this market, I find very difficult to understand. But then again, I guess New South Wales owes $38 billion, and it's rising by sort of $15 billion a day. They're projecting to borrow $7 billion this year. So despite all this talk of a budget deficit of $917 million being announced this year, the real figure, when you include all capital spending and infrastructure and everything else, is the fact that New South Wales is borrowing more than it earns, to the tune of $6 or $7 billion a year. So clearly they've got to do something, and tax hikes and spending cuts. And personally, I do support the coal tax increase. That the coal industry have had massive windfalls. Much of it's owned by Swiss company Xstrata or South African company Anglo American. They've made super profits. They are extracting an asset that's owned by the taxpayers in New South Wales. Queensland's already done the coal royalty increase. So things like that I think you can justify. But obviously, the big one is the 460,000 public sector workers in New South Wales, and the fact that New South Wales never did the 100,000 cut in public sector workers that, say, the Kennett government did back in the early 90s in Victoria, drove the efficiencies, privatised everything that wasn't battened down in Victoria, and New South Wales delayed, and now they've got those chronic inefficiencies in things like the public transport system, and the big question is whether the Reid government can actually stump up and take some hard decisions.
Now, you're not here in the Parliamentary Press Gallery, but you do give them curry at big annual general meetings, and Kerry Stokes got cross with you. What did you do at the 7 AGM?
Well, I've spoken at more than 300 AGMs over the years, Deborah, but I've never before had a security guard start stomping towards me force me to sit down. But, yesterday, Kerry Stokes, I was making a few comments saying I think that he needs to improve his corporate governance, and he wasn't being as transparent as he could have been, and should communicate a bit more fulsomely with shareholders, and that was it. Kerry Stokes just said, sit down. I've had enough. And then, bang, the security guard was coming over, and so I duly sat down. So it was a very, very combative meeting with the billionaire. I mean, he's done a good job with Channel 7, but he's just one of those guys who gets a bit awkward when asked a few questions and doesn't like answering them. So, it was pretty... It was on for young and old yesterday down there at Channel 7, I can tell you.
Dear O.B., I wonder... But by and large, though, among the media companies, which we've talked about before, how does Seven's performance rate when you compare it with the other media companies?
Well, Seven has warned that profits will be down by 50% this year. And I guess if Seven's profits are down 50%, heaven help 9 and 10, because their ratings are much lower. So the whole industry is in quite a mess. I mean, I'll be going to the Fairfax AGM on Thursday in Melbourne, and they're a company which claims they're worth $5 billion, but the current market value is only $3 billion. So clearly they need to take some hard decisions in writing down the value of things like the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, just as CBS has done with its television licences, just as the Washington Post has just done in writing down its masthead. So the media industry, it's not quite as bad as the car industry, but it really is in the front line of the global financial crisis, because advertising is one of the first things that people can cut. So anyone who's got too much debt is really suffering. And in the case of, say, PBL Media and the private equity firms that own Channel 9, I think that equity's gone, that they won't be able to pay back all that debt. And similarly, Channel 10's parent is under extreme pressure. Tony O'Reilly selling out of Australia. Even Fairfax, with its $2.5 billion of debt, is facing tough times with advertising crashing. So Channel 7 at one level, Kerry Stokes has got $1.5 billion of cash. sitting in his public company. But equally, there's $2.5 billion of debt sitting in the joint venture vehicle with the private equity firm KKR, which actually operates the Channel 7 station. So even that, you have to ask questions about the debt, although Kerry Stokes yesterday said there will be no need to pump in more money, and the situation with Channel 9 was very different with Channel 7.
Well, we won't send a security guard after you, Stephen. You can come back any time.
All right. Thanks very much, Deborah.
Stephen Mayne there. He's a founder of crikey.com.au, shareholder activist and great commentator on business and corporate affairs in Australia.